This is Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moscowain. Five of the Democratic candidates for president met for their first debate in Las Vegas last night. Despite the flashy setting, no super big fireworks. Candidates were able to get into their positions on some big issues. We'll talk about that this hour. And there were a few amusing moments, like this one after Hillary Clinton was asked about using a private email server when she was Secretary of State. She admitted it was a mistake, but then tried to turn the conversation back to her policies, something that the crowd cheered about. Moderator Anderson Cooper turned to Bernie Sanders, perhaps hoping he would attack her on that point, but he didn't. Here's the clip, courtesy of CNN.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too.
And there were a lot of nice pictures showing Clinton shaking Sanders' hand after that. We're going to bring some guests into our conversation, and later on, we hope to hear from you as well. Joining us here in the studio, we have Dick Pullman. He's national political columnist at Newsworks.org, where he writes the National Interest blog and is a full-time writer in residence at the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing at the University of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Radio Times, Dick.
Thanks again.
Also, we have Ben Berger. He's Associate Professor of Political Science and the Interim Executive Director of the Lang Center for Civil and Social Responsibility at Swarthmore College. And welcome to Radio Times.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thank you.
And on the telephone, we have Jill Lawrence. She is a columnist and contributing editor to U.S. News and World Report. Jill Lawrence, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
I want to just start out, let's get a little response. I think that clip of Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, that was kind of a highlight of the evening. And Ben Berger, you're shaking your head there.
It was exceptional moment. And it was actually a win-win. I think it was good for Clinton and good for Sanders. I thought of Miracle on 34th Street with Kris Kringle getting goodwill for his employer by referring people to the competition. And it reminded me a little bit of Reagan's ad lib, of There You Go Again, against Jimmy Carter, which was enduring. But the difference is, and this is many differences between Reagan and Sanders, is that Reagan was going by what he thought would play, I think, with the people, and Sanders was speaking from principle.
And looking around at what people are writing this morning, it seems like there's a clear sense that Hillary Clinton maybe came out on top here. Is that your sense, Dick Pullman?
Yes, Jeff. I felt that I was seeing something that I'd saw a lot in 2008 that a lot of us have forgotten about, which is that she's actually very good in this kind of format. You know, she debated at least two dozen times thereabouts in 2007, 2008, and against, I think, actually a broader and more talented field of rivals. I think it showed last night. You know, there's no replacement for experience, and she seemed like she was relaxed. Confident, she looked like she was suffused with good cheer. I think she hit her principal points, you know, which was basically to say, you know, to draw on her experience, to also, by the way, tie herself closely to President Obama, because point of fact is Obama is still very popular with the Democratic base. And there were like four or five key junctures where she kept saying, you know, President Obama and I, President Obama and I. And she there's this thing about her and Obama chasing down the Chinese to get with the program on climate change. And she told that anecdote twice.
Sure. And Jill Lawrence, in your piece for U.S. News this morning, U.S. News and World Report this morning, you started out your piece with this sentence. You said, "Sad news for Bernie Sanders fans. I don't think this is going to work out the way they want." Explain what you mean.
Well, Bernie Sanders actually ended up being a perfect foil for Hillary Clinton in the debate, and he did more to help her. I mean, he was obviously a huge help on the email controversy, as you mentioned, but he, just by being who he is, he kind of pointed up some things about Hillary Clinton. She seemed young compared to him. he actually had a moment where he seemed to not have been listening and seemed to be groping for a response. And he's just so very gruff that he made her seem playful and kind of charming. You know, these are not words you often hear people describing Hillary Clinton as. He also, with some of his answers about his political philosophy, really pointed up, kind of how left-wing he is and how mainstream she is. And I thought that she really took advantage of her opportunities. She was the only candidate who jumped in when the moderator said, is there anyone else here who doesn't consider themselves a capitalist? That was kind of a reverse way of putting the question, and she jumped in to defend capitalism, of course, using these small business, the most noble part of capitalism, and how, our responsibility is to rein in capitalism, but this is the best system in the history of the world. So she really took her opportunities, and he handed a lot of them to her.
Yeah. And, you point out in your piece this morning, we're not really talking about anyone here who's young. Sanders is 74 years old. Clinton is 67. But you said that that he made her look young. And Dick Pullman, that idea of making her look young. I mean, there was talk early on about Hillary Clinton. Is she too old to become president?
Well, he's got, and I think he has one other problem that people overlook, which is, he's got this outsider brand, but he's actually been in Congress for 25 years, and he's got a legislative record. And there were a couple times last night, I thought he was fine sometimes when he was on offense. He was bellowing his convictions like he was like in a still a hall of 20,000 people. But when he had to play defense a few times on some of his key votes, particularly on guns, particularly on immunizing the gun manufacturers from lawsuits, I thought he was stumbling around, and I thought he was, he started talking about, well, this vote meant that and that vote meant this. And, that's the kind of stuff, frankly, that so-called insiders have to deal with. So, I thought that was a problem. And also, frankly, when he starts to defend the term democratic socialism and say that, we're going to win, by defending democratic socialism. I don't know. In America, I still think I don't know whether I have agreement on this, but I still think it's a downside to wear that label and, in fact, to embrace it.
Hmm. And Ben Berger, let's turn to you. And of course, President Obama, there's a general sort of theory that he did well because he sort of energized a new generation of voters. And of course, we're talking about millennials here. And you've got candidates who are older than President Obama running now. Did you see anything last night that sort of would maybe appeal to this generation and sort of gather some of that steam that the President Obama created?
Yeah, actually, it's amazingly enough, it's Sanders, right, who the oldest one there, who was energizing all the millennials. And if you looked at the online community, Facebook, and really all the different venues that held votes last night, Sanders was the resounding winner. Now, I agree with Dick and Jill that I thought that Hillary did what she needed to do. We want to talk about what we mean by winning. But I thought that he was clearly the person who excited the most people. The problem is this. When it turns to governing, when you go from winning after you win an election, then you want to govern afterwards, he recognized that he needs to keep on having those people mobilized. And even Obama did not do that in 2008. He did not keep people energized after the election. It's so difficult. I don't think Sanders realized just how tough it really is.
Hmm. My colleagues at NPR ran stopwatches to time how much speaking time each candidate got last night. And Hillary Clinton came out on top with 30 minutes, 25 seconds. Sanders was second, 27 minutes, 41 seconds. Then we had O'Malley, Webb, Chafee. We might even have to say who those people are, because some people might not know who they are. So I'll just do that real quickly. Martin O'Malley, he's former governor of Maryland. Jim Webb, former senator from Virginia, and former secretary of the Navy. And Lincoln Chafee, former Rhode Island governor and senator. But the fact that we have to say who they are at this point, is that a problem?
Well, it's a problem. It's a problem for. You get into a vicious circle if you're not mentioned that much, and then if you don't get enough time, you're therefore, you're sort of on the wheel of not getting anywhere. But I have very little sympathy. I have to say I have little sympathy for Jim Webb in particular, mm-hmm. who spent a heck of a lot of his time last night complaining that he wasn't getting a heck of a lot of time. And this is somebody who you know, he announced for president a long time ago, and he vanishes from the campaign trail for, like, I think it seems like weeks or months at a time. And then he comes into a debate, and he's complaining that he's not getting equal time with Hillary Clinton, and I found that kind of wasteful.
Hmm. And Jill Lawrence, the fact that that Hillary Clinton got the most time, Sanders came in second, and then the others kind of down the list, does that make a difference?
Well, I think it was only fair. I agree with Dick. It's kind of nervy to demand more time when you're at zero in polls and you're not really running a campaign. And, you know, the same is true of Lincoln Chafee, and I would not be surprised to see both of them disappear from the stage last time. I thought Martin O'Malley did something with his time. He is actually the only young person in this field. He's 52, and he tried to make an issue of the generation gap. He actually used the same argument that Barack Obama used in 2008, saying, you know, how can we think that if we resort to the same names, the same leaders, we're going to have different results? But this time, Hillary Clinton was prepared for that, and she had some good answers, saying she's not running on her name. You know, she's running on her proposals, and people need to look at her record and her achievements. And, you know, she was very definitive about that, where she had ignored it last time. I guess she thought that Obama wasn't really so much of a threat. But, you know, I don't think he got much traction, to tell you the truth. I was surprised that he didn't mention what Rachel Maddow said was the best aspect of his gun safety, gun control proposals, which was that the federal government should use its enormous purchasing power to only buy guns that have the best safety features and, you know, are the ones that actually are really opposed by the National Rifle Association. But, you know, he didn't do that. He didn't make any references to all fame he had, the awards and recognition he got for being a terrific manager of a state. You know, he had all kinds of, he had a national reputation before he started this race, but this race seems to have erased it.
We have just about a minute before we're going to take a break, and I want to talk more about guns in the next segment. But Ben Berger, just to kind of wrap up sort of this first segment about the Democratic debate last night, and some of the Republican debates got pretty high ratings. Is there a sense that people are paying attention here? Do you get a sense that people understand what's going on and are interested?
They're clearly not. It didn't help last night that the New York and Los Angeles were both in a baseball game against each other during the debate itself. They're expecting way, way lower numbers. We don't know the ratings exactly what they're going to be. They didn't have Donald Trump. That's going to hurt as well. More than half of the registered voters said they within the last week they didn't know there was a debate last night. So it's going to take a while. They'll start paying attention eventually, but not for a while, I think.
Can I just interject something
here? Very, just 10 seconds.
Final ratings, but early indications I'm reading are that this debate set a record for Democratic debates, but won't approach Republican audience.
We're talking about the first Democratic debate for the presidential campaign. Of course, the primary is coming up next year. And the guest this hour, that you just heard from Jill Lawrence. She's on the telephone. She's a columnist and contributing editor for U.S. News and World Report. We also have Dick Pullman here from Newsworks and Ben Berger from Swarthmore College. And we'd like you to join the conversation, too. You can give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Also, you can send an email to radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be back after a break. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about the Democratic debate that was last night on CNN. And one of the things that we were just talking about were the ratings. Are people paying attention to this? And we received an email from Shirley. She said, my daughter is a freshman at Penn and watched the debate with her dorm mates, and Sanders was definitely a favorite. I want to talk about that a little bit more in just a second here, because I think he is having an effect on some of the topics coming up here. But first, let's talk about those ratings. And Dick Pullman, you had an observation you want to make about that.
Well, yeah, just before the break, I was thinking this, that the Republican ratings, this is just anecdotal, but I think the Republican ratings are inflated by the fact that there are, and I just anecdotally because I know people do this, who have absolutely no intention to vote for a Republican candidate, none of them, but they're tuning in for the freak show. You know, they love the spectacle of it, you know, they want to see what Trump's going to say. They want to see how everybody else is going to play off of Trump. But it's to them, it's entertainment, and it doesn't necessarily translate into support.
Yeah, they got into some meaty issues last night. And one of the things that kind of surprised me is every single candidate in their opening statement mentioned income inequality. And Ben Berger, I wonder if does that show some sort of influence from Bernie Sanders in this race?
Yeah, I think it does. But I also think that Sanders is tapping into something larger, something in the zeitgeist. This has not been something that's been able to generate this much support that so many people have come to be aware about. A lot of political scientists are writing about this, sociologists too. But it's becoming coming into the general sort of mainstream ideas. The weird thing is they're not all so far away from Sanders in their positions. I think he really is a Sino, the socialist in name only, right? that really he keeps clinging to this term. But he's much closer to a European social democrat than to a democratic socialist. He's not for the nationalization of property. His positions are actually supported, some of them, by a broad range of Americans and are close to the other candidates. But he clings to that term. And the question is why? I actually think he wants to rehabilitate it in sort of the way that Lenny Bruce wanted to take on to deprive of power certain kinds of slurs. And then he's insistent, I'm going to keep on using this and show you that it's not such a scary thing. It may be a self-sacrificial kind of move, though.
Wow. Jill Lawrence, did you ever imagine in covering politics that there would be a candidate doing well who would describe themselves over and over and over again as a democratic socialist?
No, to tell you the truth, I never did. But I completely agree with Ben on this. If you look at some of his positions, it's really weird. I mean, he's for a single-payer health system, which a lot of Democrats favor. He is for free college. You know, how different is that from free community college, which is the Obama position? He just goes a little further than most people on some issues, and he's right on the same page as most Democrats are. So, you know, in that sense, he's mainstream. I think what he's really tapping into is this whole desire for authenticity and, you know, the comparison with Hillary Clinton. He does not trim any sails. In fact, one of the reasons I think he ran into a little trouble in the debate was that he's been doing these big, enthusiastic rally crowds, and he hasn't had to explain himself and defend himself. And so when he gets in a situation where there are some expectations like that, where he's got a broader audience than just his fans, you know, he runs into trouble. I think the other thing is that we were told that he didn't prepare for this debate. He knows who he is. He knows what he wants to say. But then that left him flat-footed when people were asking, you know, when the moderators were asking about things like his record on guns. So, you know, it's a mixed bag for him, this whole identity that he's trying to convey.
Yeah, I want to talk about gun control, and the NRA was mentioned, I think, more often at the Democratic debate than any other Republican debates. But this was a place where we got to see some differences between the candidates. Bernie Sanders, he's from a relatively rural state where he says views on guns are different from a lot of folks who live in cities. And he made a point of mentioning that the NRA gave him a D- for his voting record. Still, he voted against legislation that would have held gun manufacturers more accountable. And we have another audio clip, courtesy of CNN, in which Sanders explains to host or moderator Anderson Cooper some, or at least he tries to explain some of the nuances in his approach to regulating guns. Here's that clip.
Do I think that a gun shop in the state of Vermont that sells legally a gun to somebody, and that somebody goes out and does something crazy, that gun shop owner should be held responsible? I don't. On the other hand, where you have manufacturers and where you have gun shops knowingly giving guns to criminals or aiding and abetting that, of course we should take action.
Secretary Clinton, is Bernie Sanders tough enough on guns?
No, not at all. I think that we have to look at the fact that we lose 90 people a day from gun violence. This has gone on too long, and it's time the entire country stood up against the NRA. The majority of our country supports background checks, and even the majority of gun owners do.
So you heard an applause line there, and I kind of get the sense that that Hillary Clinton was just kind of waiting for that chance to allow herself to kind of appear to the left of Bernie Sanders. Did you get that, Dick Pullman?
Well, yes, and even more interestingly, I think, is that we have an issue here, guns, that Democrats used to flee from with all deliberate speed. And now all of a sudden, you know, it's different. You know, the atmosphere has changed, maybe because, you know, these mass shootings. Getting to Bernie's left is obviously the short-term thing. But if you're looking at it long-term, you know, there was a time when the Democrats, after the 1994 assault weapons ban law was passed, and then they got wiped out in the so-called Gingrich Revolution in 1994, the feeling in the Democratic Party was, let's not touch the gun issue anymore. And then when Al Gore lost in 2000, very narrowly lost his home state of Tennessee, et cetera, people were saying, oh, well, it's guns again. And so we've got it. We can't touch this. Now, all of a sudden, 15 years later, Hillary Clinton, who is supposedly so cautious, is embracing it, you know, openly and ardently and repeatedly. And so there is obviously is some kind of a sea change. And my guess would be that there's certainly some calculation here that the so-called gun control left of center issue is actually now mainstream, that when you have 90% of people saying after Sandy Hook that they wanted universal background checks. And so now it is a solid centrist issue, essentially.
And Jill Lawrence, did you see that as kind of Hillary Clinton's opportunity to sort of appear, at least, to be to the left of Bernie Sanders at a time where in a primary season?
You know, I'm not sure she was trying to get to the left. I think it was more like what Dick was talking about, that this is now a 90% issue on a lot of these measures that people want. You know, 90% support for universal background checks, that sort of thing, and you know, repeated horrors of these mass shootings and children shooting people by accident, that sort of thing. So I think it's a safe issue at this point, and it's a popular one. And you know, she and Martin O'Malley were the two who said, when they were asked to name the enemy they're most proud of, he said NRA, and so did she. So I think this is now not just mainstream for Democrats, but mainstream for the country.
Well, let's bring some listeners into the conversation. You can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can call us or you can email us, radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We received an email from William. He says, Clinton O'Malley ticket, that would be his choice. Can you imagine a Clinton O'Malley ticket, Ben Berger?
I absolutely can't. I actually heard what I didn't agree with was a number of people after the debate saying they would like to see Clinton and Sanders, and that seems to me completely out of play, because the president doesn't want to have someone running with her who is both going to steal some limelight and disagree publicly. But if she wants to appear more progressive, she can go to O'Malley. She could go to, you know, Julian Castro. But I thought that O'Malley won in that regard. We talked about winners and losers. He was never going to become the main contender. But I thought he did quite well in terms of prepping himself for future possibilities like VP, like a cabinet position.
Dick Pullman, can you imagine a Clinton-O'Malley ticket?
Yeah, conceivably. I think Martin O'Malley can certainly imagine a Clinton-O'Malley ticket. In fact, there were several times last night where he was, you know, praising her, and I'm thinking, well, wait a second here. You know, what's going on? You know, he didn't want to attack her full on because, you know, he looks at the polls and he sees, frankly, that, you know, she's still, despite all her woes this year, very, very popular with the Democratic base. There's a new ABC News Washington Post poll out, which says that she has 79% favorability rating within the Democratic Party. By the way, Bernie Sanders' favorability in the same poll is 47%. So, you know, O'Malley wasn't going to, like, come at her heavily. So he's obviously – I think he's just playing for – I've thought this all along, frankly, that he's just playing for second place.
Yeah, well, he also, as it was pointed out, supported Hillary Clinton in 2008. So
yeah,
she got that
in there.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about him, though, is sadly for him, he comes from Maryland, which is not a swing state and not a valuable state. And also, he is, sorry guys, a white male. And that doesn't bring any demographic benefits to the ticket. I mean, and maybe it's okay since she's a woman, but there are other choices she could make from states that might be more useful.
Not a huge amount of geographic diversity in that pool of candidates either. I'm a Westerner. I grew up in Oregon. I didn't see anybody from my side of the coast out there.
Or the South.
That's why people sometimes do mention Julian Castro, right, in that kind of regard. It's funny because, Dick, like you, I thought all along, well, maybe, why are Webb and Chafee running? Maybe they're also angling for some kind of future role. Neither one of them got it. I thought that Webb came off as combative, and not in a good kind of stalwart way, but as surly and wanting to punch somebody. Well, I thought he wanted to punch Anderson Cooper. He was complaining about the time that he was getting. Right, so he's not getting a cabinet position, I think.
All right. Well, let's go to the telephone. We have Brad from Princeton on the line. Brad, welcome to Radio Times.
All right. Thank you so much. I am a physician. I do primary care in central New Jersey. And central New Jersey is a bit of a microcosm of the nation. At least that's what I found. And I don't see any enthusiasm for any candidates here. The only enthusiasm I see is for the concept that all of these candidates are unfit to run for office.
Hmm.
And if you talk about disenfranchisement, we feel disenfranchised because these folks are running. There's nobody running who we support, Democrats or Republicans.
Huh. Well, you know, I remember being in Denver on the night that Barack Obama was elected, and there was a lot of excitement there. I wonder if a new bar has been set for people getting excited about a candidate. Do you see that, Jill Lawrence?
Well, it seems to me that between the two fields, there's quite a gamut of candidates, and I'm not sure why people can't find someone they're excited about. It certainly seems there's a lot of people excited about Donald Trump and Ben Carson, maybe for the wrong reasons, but, you know, they're compelling in their ways. And, seeing Clinton and Sanders last night, kind of renewed the sense that there's a reason these people are leading the polls. There's a reason that Democrats like them. I'm not quite sure why it is that voters would feel there's nobody to be at least interested in, if not excited about.
Mm. And Hillary Clinton tried to generate some excitement about the idea of her being the first woman president, didn't she, a couple times?
I thought she didn't do it at all in 2008, and now I think she's overdoing it. But, whatever works, I guess. It's clear she's a woman. She even made a bathroom joke about being a woman.
I saw that, and a lot of people didn't catch that. Did you guys catch that? It was after one of the breaks. They came back, and clearly Anderson Cooper was concerned that the candidates were not going to be lined up on the stage in time to come back on the air. And he was expressing relief, and Hillary Clinton said, well, it takes me a little longer.
Well, maybe that's worth another 2 points in Iowa. Who knows?
well, Dick Pullman, this idea that trying to generate some excitement by being a female candidate, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, she's playing on that heavily. I mean, that's her ticket to saying that she's an outsider. I think there was a few times lately she's been saying that. She goes, hey, if there's any outsider here, it's me. There's never been a female president. And, that could help. I mean, but I think the broader question of enthusiasm, this is something you can do a whole hour on, and we're not going to do it. We're going to do 2 seconds. But, people were greatly enthused by Obama, and 4 years, 8 years later, now we're still talking about income inequality and the narrowing of the middle class. And the world looks like it's, a mess, and we can't impose our will around the world, et cetera, et cetera. And so people feel that, broadly, that, what's the political system really doing for us? And these politicians always promise stuff and they never come through. So you've still got a situation where in America where, a fantastically participatory election is 55% of the vote. Or something, 55% of the voters turn out and 45% stay home. Sometimes the Bush-Gore race, half the country stayed home. So this is not anything new, by the way. Whatever, I'm not meaning to dishonor what the caller from Central Jersey said, but we have heard this over the years.
Sure, and Ben Berger. I mean, it's almost a kind of a political sport in itself to sort of be. To be kind of a little cynical and say you're not enthused by someone. I mean, that's kind of a way to sort of criticize politics generally, isn't it?
At least in the U.S. it is, yeah. We have a strong strain of anti-establishment sort of feeling. I'm curious to know who the previous caller would have supported, who the last person to excite that caller would have been. Because there's sometimes it's the case that anybody who seems to be allied with sort of doing the hard business of governing isn't very appealing. That's one of the reasons why I think both Sanders and Trump in either party are exciting a certain part of the population, because what they're doing is saying that the system as it is broken, it's not responsive enough, and we're going to respond to you. I don't think it's going to win, but I think it's why a lot of people are getting excited about that.
And that I want to go back to that. I still keep thinking about this idea of all that excitement that President Obama generated. Can anybody latch on to that? And did any of those candidates last night try? Jill Lawrence, did you see any evidence of that during the debate last night?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton tried on the, you know, when she's talking about being the first woman, you know, she's trying to get that sort of demographic pioneer aspect in there. I think it would have been more effective had she used it the first time around, because now we're kind of used to the idea. But, you know, the other thing about excitement, I mean, there's, you know, it can be misleading. People were excited about Obama in 2008. They were not excited in 2012, and that led to Mitt Romney sort of, you know, thinking wrongly that he had all that Republicans and he had all the excitement and that his voters were going to get to the polls. Democrats did vote. They just weren't, you know, all excited about it as they had been in visible ways when pollsters called in 2008. So it's, you know, it's a misleading indicator in a way.
And Ben Berger, you had something you wanted to say about that?
Absolutely. I think that's a really important point, that excitement is great. And Obama was a rock star in 2008. He wasn't in 2012. And what won then was the ground game and a lot of savvy with big data. I don't think Bernie Sanders has the first notion about that, nor does he have, I think, the machine to plug in once the race gets going. And Hillary does. And so in spite of whatever enthusiasm gap there might be, I think she's going to be able to do that.
And Dick Pullman, just about 30 seconds here.
Well, I think there's also this excitement thing. I think there's a little cognitive dissonance, too, because we're talking the candidates who do generating the most excitement, Trump and Sanders. It's like, well, we're just going to change. We're going to promise sweeping change and gigantic changes. But, you know, getting right down to it, how are they going to govern? You know, how would they govern with, say, a Republican House or a Senate where neither party has is filibuster proof?
We're talking about the Democratic debate last night. And if you want to join the conversation, the telephone number is 1-888-477-9499. The email address is radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. When we come back from a break, we're going to hear from some folks who are on the telephone who have some questions. We're going to talk a little bit more about Hillary Clinton and her performance in the campaign. We'll have some time to take your phone calls. That number again, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be back after a break. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about the Democratic debate last night, and we are going to take a few phone calls. So we have Victor from Center City. Victor, welcome to Radio Times.
The question that I have, and I just cannot understand why this hasn't come up yet, but one of our most able ambassadors to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria was Ryan Crocker. Ryan Crocker on NPR program, a national program, makes the charge that when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she never set foot in Iraq. We were given the leader at the time, Maliki, billions. We had troops on the ground. Yet, as a senator on the Armed Services Committee, she did vote to invade Iraq. Jimmy Carter has made the comment that right now the Middle East is in its worst state in 70 years. Doesn't anybody think that's relevant? Secretary of State, she never set foot in Iraq, giving Maliki billions, troops on the ground.
Okay, so I don't know offhand if I'm assuming that what you're saying there is accurate, that she never set foot in Iraq as Secretary of State. So assuming that that's correct, is that important, Dick Pullman?
Well, assuming it's correct, I mean it's important if a voter thinks it's important. It's it's analogous to the stuff that a lot of the candidates on stage were saying last night when they were going after her repeatedly for her vote in the Senate to authorize war with Iraq. I mean, you know, that's all it's of a piece. I suppose they could have brought that up as well, but you know they did replay 2002 quite a few times. And I don't know, you know, certainly it's legitimate and relevant to bring it up. The question is whether at this point, really the bottom line is, whether the Democratic base, the grassroots Democratic voters, the ones who are likely to come out in the primary, are still fixed on how she voted in 2002. You know, she's made, she's said many times over the years in gradations that she regrets the vote, that she's sorry for the vote, that she would have voted otherwise, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a question of, you know, how many people on, is it, you know, is it dispositive for a lot of voters? You know, like I said before, the ABC Washington Post poll, she has a 79% favorability rating. That suggests to me that most people at this point have come, you know, to a, to, you know, they've come to accept her vote and her regrets thereafter.
And I thought it was interesting that Hillary Clinton was very good at turning negatives into positives last night, it seemed like, during that debate, and sort of taking one point and sort of turning to something that, really, I think, helped her look very strong. There was an interesting moment where she was being asked about paid leave for new parents. And the moderator, Anderson Cooper, brought up, I think it was Anderson Cooper, it may have been someone else, there were some other folks asking questions too, but brought up that that the Republican candidate, Carly Fiorina, said that that would cost jobs. And Hillary Clinton's response to that, it could have been a just sort of simple kind of two-sentence sort of response, but instead, this is what she did, and this clip is courtesy of CNN.
You know, when people say that, it's always the Republicans or their sympathizers who say you can't have paid leave, you can't provide health care. They don't mind having big government to interfere with a woman's right to choose and to try to take down Planned Parenthood. They're fine with big government when it comes to that. I'm sick of it. You know, we can do these things. We should not be paralyzed. We should not be paralyzed by the Republicans and their constant refrain, big government this, big government that, except for what they want to impose on the American people. I know we can afford it because we're going to make the wealthy pay for it.
So Jill Lawrence, a little red meat for the base there, it sounded like.
Yeah, that was a terrific bit of jujitsu. She, you're right, she did that often. In fact, she did it on Iraq when the other candidates were attacking her vote in 2002 and said, you know, how can we trust you? Look at the judgment you displayed there. It was terrible. And her comeback was that Obama had chosen her to be his Secretary of State. And so he, of course, valued her judgment. And she then went on to say they'd had, you know, many discussions of very complicated issues in the Situation Room. And she made so many remarks like that about their partnership that it was kind of almost like she was telling Joe Biden, you know, I have taken the slot that usually the vice president would take as the heir apparent in a nomination race. So that space is filled too late.
We received a tweet from Shimmy, who said, I'm assuming that's a screen name, but I'm not certain, said, just like the rest of the night, Sanders had real-world solutions with substance, and Clinton had applause lines. There were certainly applause lines in there, but there was some substance in there, too, wasn't there, Dick Pullman?
Sure. I mean, look, you know, I mean, I'm not saying this as a brief for her candidacy, but I just, as an observation, I find that I would be frustrated if I was her in some regard, because it's like, you know, when she sort of does the sort of performance theatrics, like, you know, being sort of cheerful and happy and laughing on stage, people say, you know, oh, look, you know, look how artificial and look how she's trying to do these, present herself as a normal person. Mm-hmm. But then when she tries to talk substance and she says, as she said many times during the debate, you know, I have a plan for this, I have a plan for that, then people say, oh, God, these politicians with their plans, you know, well, you know, which is it, and what is she supposed to do if she can't do either of those? So, yeah, there were plenty of times where she had substance.
Yeah, it sounds like another instance of our sort of the hobby of being cynical.
She had a lot of substance, and I also disagree that Sanders always had particular policies to put in place. I thought he was incredibly smart and very quick and coming off as principled. I thought he did a really good job. However, he puts forward positions that will not be able to pass through in Congress, and his solution is this. His solution is, I'm going to energize the base now, and I'm going to keep them energized and mobilized, and I will get millions of people to keep on coming out and demonstrate and shut things down. That has never happened yet. Maybe it will now, probably won't. It's not usually the way things get passed now. So I think that in many ways, Clinton had more substance because she knew how to get those things accomplished.
Let's bring another listener into the conversation. And we have Alice from Trooper, Pennsylvania. Alice, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What's your question?
Okay. You were asking earlier what kind of a person people might get excited about.
Yes.
I just think that all the candidates on the left are talking a lot about income equality and jobs, and the candidates on the right are talking a lot about social issues like gay marriage and abortion. But the biggest problems that we have today are ISIS and the national debt. And Washington talking to each other so they can get anything done. And I don't see anybody who's offering a good path in those directions.
So, Jill Lawrence, I don't remember hearing anything about the national debt last night. There was a little bit about foreign policy. What do you think of Alice's observation?
Well, I think that she's right about foreign policy being very vital, you know, that it could be our most serious problem at the moment. And it certainly comes up a lot in Republican debates with a lot of hawkishness on the Republican side, with a few exceptions every once in a while, Donald Trump or Rand Paul. Last night, what was striking to me was how Bernie Sanders really, you know, was on the defensive about whether he was a pacifist or not, you know, his conscientious objector application during Vietnam, whether he ever is in favor of any war. You know, this is very appealing to a slice of the Democratic electorate, but the fact that Hillary Clinton is doing so well and she's relatively hawkish is, you know, very telling, I think, about people's mindset. So I think I agree it would have been great to have more discussion of that. And, you know, a lot of what there was in the discussion last night had to do with what happened in 2002 and people blaming the current situation on the Iraq war, which was so destabilizing. But that, of course, doesn't address what they would do in the future. We did hear from Hillary Clinton, you know, that she does want a no-fly zone. And we did hear Martin O'Malley say he doesn't. And so, I mean, there were some differences. Mm-hmm. But in terms of an overall strategy, no, we didn't really hear much about that.
Let's go back to another listener. We have Anthony from White Marsh, Pennsylvania, and Anthony has a question about not just the candidates, but also who hosted the debate. Anthony, welcome to Radio Times.
Yes, thank you. I am astonished that this debate was broadcast on CNN. What about the millions of Americans who lack cable television and could have heard this debate on or seen this debate on television if it were broadcast over the major networks?
Well, I guess the best answer, this is Dick Pullman talking, is, you know, cable has been broadcasting debates for, you know, many election cycles. I think there's now, if you have a computer, anybody with a computer can watch these things online. So read the transcripts the next day and see the clips, the key clips. Anyway, start becoming recycled on the over the air broadcast. Anyway, so I think the issue of that issue has sort of come and gone.
And what even more generally about how CNN sort of handled this, Ben Berger? What did you think of? Did they do a good job
when it was starting? So the pregame festivities, I was thinking a lot of the Republican debates, and both of those made me think of the late media theorist Neil Postman, who wrote Amusing Ourselves to Death. He wrote about the progressive move towards more and more entertainment in public discourse and less information. And the early part, before it actually started, was just like a game show or reality TV. But then it got more substantive. And it was quite different from the Republican debates in that regard. And I was impressed that in a minute time or half-minute responses, people said substantive stuff. So I actually thought that once it got going, I was appalled by the early part. Once it got going, they hit their stride.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead, Jill Lawrence.
Well, I was just going to say, this is Jill, that I thought it was, I hope nobody follows the example of CNN in having, in matching demographic questioners to demographic questions. I mean, why have the only woman questioner ask about paid family leave? Why have the Hispanic questioner ask about immigration? It just seemed, you know, I just didn't really understand why they did that, and it was kind of cringeworthy.
And Dick Pullman?
Well, yeah. Also, yeah, right. The Hispanic questioner was also the only one to ask, you know.
He
was the one
that asked immigration. That's right.
And he was the one that asked the marijuana question, too. But that's something else as well. On the substance side of things, and what Ben was saying before about once things got going, I have a stat for you, which I kind of figured. There was a lot of mentions last night about the middle class. And Hillary Clinton she hit that a million times about trying to sort of, you know, rebuild and strengthen the middle class. I actually went back and looked at the Republican debate, the second Republican debate, and I did a search for the phrase middle class. So this was a 3-hour debate. It was mentioned. The phrase was mentioned three times.
Hmm. Well, you know, we're almost at the end of the hour here, and one name we have not mentioned yet is the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Can I read my lead this morning from the
I would love to hear your lead, Dick Coleman.
No, this is not meant as a dramatic reading. So what I said, and I'll skip over the typo here, says, I wrote, by the time Hillary Clinton finished acing the Democratic debate, Joe Hamlet Biden surely said to himself, you know who the biggest loser was tonight? Me.
Oh, wow. Well, even more than Jim Webb or
I don't see, well,
Lincoln
yeah,
Chafee?
Because I don't see an opening here. I think she did well enough for, you know, to sort of make his potential candidacy irrelevant.
So Ben Berger?
I was thinking exactly the same thing at the end of the debate. Then I started to think of it in a little bit tempered way. Yes and no. I think he was a loser in that there's not an opening for him, but I'm not sure he could have changed things by participating. I think of Joe Biden the way I think of fantasy football. Right? He's like the player that you keep in reserve on the bench in case the star player goes down with an injury, and then you plug him in. And the only way he was going to be able to make a place for himself was if she metaphorically injured herself or was injured last night. But she didn't. She wasn't. And she came off strong. And so then you forget about the reserve player, and that's what's going to happen.
Jill Lawrence, is there a place for Joe Biden now?
Oh, well, maybe in the background as an emergency person if the FBI finds that Clinton compromised national security with her emails or something like that. But I think that there's a lot of people probably breathing a sigh of relief because this makes it much less likely he's going to get in. He's never been good at running for president. He's tried it twice and flopped miserably. And, people are always most popular before they get in a race, so he's on a high note. The other thing is that he himself said, you know, that in his current state of mourning for his son, he wouldn't be able to devote the kind of energy, you know, 100%+ that you need for a presidential campaign. So, I always thought it was a remote possibility. And last night, as I wrote in my column, whether deliberate or not, Clinton's unspoken message to the actual vice president came across as don't even think about it. I may have some differences with Obama, but that space is taken. So, you know, she left him no space, really.
Huh. Well, you mentioned a high note. So marijuana did come up I try my best. Do you really see marijuana being an issue in a campaign on the Democratic side, Jill Lawrence?
I really didn't. And I have to say I really liked Hillary Clinton's answer on that, which was she doesn't know yet whether she's in favor of legalization, and she wants to see how it works out in Colorado and some of the other states where it has been legalized. I mean, I think that's kind of the sensible way to go about this. So, but I don't think it's, you know, anybody's voting issue. It's not like people are going to the polls and deciding on that basis.
And well, Dick Pullman?
Well, I wrote that Lincoln Chafee behaved as if he had had some, and that Jim Webb looks like he should have had some.
Yeah, I think we could have spent an hour on Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee, even though they got the least amount of time on the air. But they really had a problem last night.
Well, we learned last night that one of Jim Webb's kids is a massage therapist, and also that he had killed someone.
Because yeah, the person who that was injured,
the one who threw the grenade at him,
his biggest enemy.
I thought he came off like Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction.
That's a good call.
Wow. So, just a very quick sort of roundtable, really quickly. Sort of, what is the thing you're going to be looking for next as we kind of get to the next Democratic primary debate? Let's start with you, Jill Lawrence.
Well, I'm going to be looking at the polls to see whether Martin O'Malley breaks into double digits and whether Hillary Clinton has reassured people enough.
Okay.
That, you know, perhaps she starts getting ahead in Iowa and New Hampshire.
All right, then very quick, Ben Berger.
I'm going to look to see whether the two of them drop out and whether she can continue to be the standard bearer for the party.
And very quick, Dick Pullman.
I'm going to go to see whether Bernie can sustain his enthusiasm and whether it's going to translate into an actual lead when people actually get serious about voting.
All right. That's Dick Pullman with Newsworks.org. We also heard from Ben Berger, a political science professor at Swarthmore, and Jill Lawrence, a columnist and contributing editor to U.S. News and World Report. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moskowain today.